The section of the western shore was populated largely by speakers of a language totally unknown even to Burton, a master linguist both on Earth and on the river planet. When he had learned enough to ask questions, he deduced that they must have lived somewhere in Central Europe during the early Bronze Age. They had some curious customs, one of which was copulation in public. This was interesting enough to Burton, who had co-founded the Royal Anthropological Society in London in 1863, and who had seen strange things during his explorations on Earth. He didn't participate, but neither was he horrified. A custom he did adopt joyfully was that of stained whiskers. The males resented the fact that their face hair had been permanently removed by the resurrectors, just as their prepuces had been cut off. They could do nothing about the latter outrage, but they could correct the former to a degree. They smeared their upper lips and chins with a dark liquid made from finely ground charcoal, fish glue, oak tannin, and several other ingredients. The more dedicated used the dye as a tattoo and underwent a painful and long drawn-out pricking with a sharp bamboo needle. Now Burton was doubly disguised, yet he had put himself at the mercy of the man who might betray him at the first opportunity. He wanted to attract an ethical, but did not want the ethical to be certain of his identity. Burton wanted to make sure that he could get away in time before being scooped up in the net. It was a dangerous game, like walking a tightrope over a pit of hungry wolves, but he wanted to play it. He would run only when it became absolutely necessary. The rest of the time he would be the hunted, hunting the hunter. Yet the vision of the Dark Tower or the Big Grail was always on the horizon of every thought. Why play cat and mouse when he might be able to storm the very ramparts of the castle within which he presumed the ethicals had headquarters? Or, if stormed was not the correct description, steal into the tower, effect entrance as a mouse does into a house or a castle. While the cats were looking elsewhere, the mouse would be sneaking into the tower, and there the mouse might turn into a tiger. At this thought he laughed, getting curious stares from his two hutmates, Goering, and the 17th-century Englishman, John Collop. His laugh was half ridicule of himself at the tiger image. What made him think that he, one man, could do anything to hurt the planet-shapers, resurrectors of billions of dead, feeders and maintainers of those summoned back to life? He twisted his hands, and knew that within them, and within the brain that guided them, could be the downfall of the ethicals. What this fearful thing was that he harbored within himself he didn't know, but they feared him, if he could only find out why. His laugh was only partly self-ridicule. The other half of him believed that he was a tiger among men. As a man thinks, so is he, he muttered. Goering said, "You have a very peculiar laugh, my friend, somewhat feminine for such a masculine man. It's like a thrown rock skipping over a lake of ice, or like a jackal." "I have something of the jackal and hyena in me," Burton replied. "So my detractors maintained, and they were right. But I am more than that." He rose from his bed and began to exercise, to work the sleep rust from his muscles. In a few minutes he would go with the others to a grail stone by the riverbank and charge his grail. Afterward, there would be an hour of policing the area, then drill followed by instruction in the spear, the club, the sling, the obsidian-edged sword, the bow and arrow, the flint axe, and in fighting with bare hands and feet. An hour for rest and talk and lunch, then an hour in language class, a two-hour work stint in helping build the ramparts that marked the boundaries of this little state, a half-hour rest, then the obligatory mile run to build stamina. Dinner from the Grails, and the evening off, except for those who had guard duty or other tasks. Such a schedule and such activities were being duplicated in tiny states up and down the river's length. Almost everywhere, mankind was at war, or preparing for it. The citizens must keep in shape and know how to fight to the best of their ability. The exercises also kept the citizens occupied. No matter how monotonous the martial life, it was better than sitting around wondering what to do for amusement. Freedom from worry about food, rent, bills, and the gnat-like chores and duties that had kept Earthmen busy and fretful was not all a blessing. There was the great battle against ennui, and the leaders of each state were occupied trying to think up ways to keep their people busy. It should have been paradise in River Valley, But it was war, war, war. Other things aside, however, war was, in this place, good, according to some. It gave savor to life and erased boredom. Man's greediness and aggressiveness had its worthwhile side.